evolution.
CliffCentral.com.
Good morning. Wednesday morning has rolled around again, and Animal Central is back to teach you about all things to do with your dogs, cats, conservation, everything to do with our wonderful creatures of the planet. Hi, Jono. Are you all back and ready to rock again this morning?
Yes. Wednesdays are always my favorite day of the week because we get to do this. It's not only hump day.
I know. Happy hump day.
Yes.
Happy hump day. It's been an interesting week so far. I had an interesting weekend. I actually went along to, you know, we had Arno Nordier in last week.
The Reptile Expo.
Went along there, had a look around. I was impressed. The previous one, as I mentioned to him, I kind of took a little bit of, not a fair, but was concerned about some of the venomous snakes on sale and things like chinchillas and, you know, I just don't believe that these animals should be sold.
But you say this time around, it wasn't like
that
at all.
Well, I found it very educational. Mm-hmm. This is why I go to these things, because I think knowledge, you've got to know what you're dealing with. So went along, and yes, it was very well run, very, very educational. Look, you know, I think people are always going to keep reptiles, and the trick is to stop people going into pet stores and buying these reptiles and not knowing what to do with them, and not to take these animals out of the wild. That's the other thing that I have, you know, I really don't agree with. But it was very educational. It was more for the hobbyist, the person who specializes in keeping reptiles and look after them very well. There were also a couple of rescue organizations there. In fact, the Bearded Dragon Rescue organization, we're going to definitely have them in. Because what they do is they take these poor little bearded dragons that people buy for their kids, cannot look after them, and where do they go from there?
Yeah.
So I know Ban Animal Trading was there. They did
demonstrate. Yeah, they were protesting on the Monday.
This was on the Sunday.
Okay.
They did protest. Mm-hmm. But I think from their side, you know, they're also trying to educate people. It's a difficult one. It's a difficult one because you're going to have these collectors. My own son is wanting to get more involved in reptile rescue. So, I mean, he's got a few now that one guy that joined us last week had been abused. Where does it go? It was handed in at a pet store. We now have him, and he's taken care of him. So that's why I was there, and I think, you know, education is key.
Well, speaking of expos, we got the Wodak Expo coming up.
Yes, we had Brian in last week.
The 20th one, and it's the biggest expo in Africa. So I think it's taking place on the 12th and 13th of July.
17, 18, 19th of July. Looking so forward to it. Can't wait.
And, of course, you're going to have your canine zone stand there.
Definitely. We're also involved in the Canine Zone Complete Pet Celebrity Dog Challenge.
Yes, Casper de Vries.
And hopefully, I don't see him in the studio today, but hopefully Damon Calvary as well.
Okay. I'm sure he's in.
Yes, and we got a couple of other really great celebrities, all for a good cause. It's to raise funds for the shelters that will be at the show.
Awesome.
But then you also found something very sad about pit bulls.
Well, apparently a man in Denmark, this story was sent to me by a friend of mine. You know, people are concerned about this type of thing. A Denmark man has ended his own life. He took an overdose of prescription medication. He was 27 years old. His name was Dan. He committed suicide after his pet pit bull was forced to be put down because it was on a list of banned breeds in Denmark.
Yeah.
So
that is so sad. I think quite a few countries are doing that. They banned and they're not allowed, which I find very unfair. You know, what I say is blame the owners, not the breed. A pit bull needs very specific, and we'll speak to our guest, one of our guests just now. You know, it's got to have the right owner.
Yeah.
This is what I keep saying, is people don't do their homework.
Yeah.
They will go out and they will get a border collie and expect it to stay in a backyard. Not going to work. They will get a pit bull. Don't socialize it. Again, it's a guard dog locked in
the
garden.
You have to remember when you have a working dog, it needs to work. Hey?
It needs to work.
And what we'll hear, I mean, today, let's just throw forward to today, we have an animal behaviorist with us.
Yes, we do. We've got Shannon McKay with us. Shannon is from the McKayne Training Center, and she also does the Super Pup Trainer Program. Thanks for being with us today, Shannon.
Thanks for having me.
In fact, maybe you want to jump in here quickly when we talk about that, the banning of pit bulls. Do a lot of countries do that?
Sadly, it is becoming more and more common in many countries across the world. And, yeah, you know, it's something – I think to tar an entire breed with the same brush is unfair.
Absolutely.
But, you know, it's important to consider that a pit bull is a very, very it's not an easy low-maintenance breed.
Right.
It's a kind of dog that, as you were so rightly saying, really needs a very specific kind of owner in order for the dog you know, we can't ignore the fact that the dog has been bred for so many generations to behave in a particular manner.
Right.
You're not going to undo that overnight.
No.
So you need an owner who's very switched on, very aware, and always, always on top of the dog, just in terms of knowing what to expect and if a worst case scenario arises, how to deal with it.
How to deal with it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I've got one myself, and you do need to work with them.
Yeah.
It's not like a little pug that, you know, you can put on a pillow in the corner and that's it. People need to do their homework. And I just, look, I hope that never is something that comes up in this country. Otherwise, I'll be hiding in the mountain with my boy somewhere.
Well, maybe with this tragic story, people will have a spotlight on this, will realize that it isn't about the breed of the dog. It's about how you raise it.
Correct.
And what we always hear when behaviorists speak is it's so much more about training the human than it is about training the dog.
Yes.
Absolutely. And, you know, people sometimes also have unrealistic expectations of training. You know, someone will get a pit bull for whatever reason and they'll bring it to training because they think that with training, the dog can end up being socialized entirely and behaving like a golden retriever. And there's a funny little analogy I use for them. And it's kind of like it's like taking a Ferrari to a mechanic and asking them to turn it into a Fortuna.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
The mechanic, the trainer in this situation, can make some modifications, but it's always going to be a Ferrari.
Yes.
It's a good analogy.
And that's pretty much what it boils down to. You know, training can have a big effect, but it doesn't undo things at a cellular level. And it's so important that people, like I said, they've always got to remember what they've got and avoid potential trigger situations and things like that and not expect the animal to do something which it's actually incapable of doing. I get really upset when I see people putting dogs, say, for example, like your high-energy terrier breeds, into situations that are really difficult for the dog to cope. And
wonder why it reacts to it.
Well, exactly. You know, I think to myself, why are they setting this poor animal up for failure? You know, I had sadly, I lost her last year, an Australian cattle dog, and they're not renowned for their sociability towards other dogs. And I knew this about the breed. I knew this about her. I did all of the socializing with her, and she was fine with other dogs, provided they stayed in their space. I knew that was her limitation. I respected and appreciated that. So whenever there was a situation where other dogs were going to get into her space, I actually taught her a signal that she could give to me to say, not comfortable, let's get out of here.
Yes.
And, you know, this is so important. We need to respect and appreciate the individual animal and their limitations.
Well, we also have another guest in studio, our resident veterinarian.
Yes,
Dr. Clint Austin.
Yeah, thanks for coming back today.
Now,
you just got off a flight from the USA?
From the US, from Kansas, yes.
So you're still battling a bit with jet lag today.
My body is still sleeping at this time, I'll be honest.
Well, we hope you don't doze off here. And we'll just
Shannon will kick you under the table.
Yeah, we'll start calling you Dorothy. You know, so you just got back from Kansas.
From Kansas.
Yes. There you go.
Yes. No, I think what's interesting is next week, there's been that whole case talking about pit bulls, that whole dog fighting ring that was bust, huge ring that was bust by the SPCA. We've actually got Wendy in next week who's coming to tell us all about it. And we've got Jeanette Erasmus from Underdogs and the Pitbull Federation of South Africa. It's going to be a very, very interesting show.
Well, last week, literally during our show, they were in court for it.
Yes,
and that's why they couldn't speak about it.
Yes, because they didn't want to jeopardize the case.
So this really is going to be the first time they've sort of spoken about it.
Yes,
so
we're actually very fortunate to have them both into studio. They both do incredible work. They really, really do. And then, of course, there was the big pit bull walk. Mm-hmm. I think it was two weekends ago. We're actually going to cover that in Canine Zone. There's a lot of people that, that honestly are fantastic owners for pit, for their pit bulls. And I think, again, education, education. Please don't just go out there and get a breed without doing your homework.
So true.
It is very true.
But today is obviously going to be filled with questions.
Yes,
any questions
we've got a lot
through.
Of questions. I actually put on our Canine Zone Facebook wall yesterday and I said, if anybody wants some free veterinary or behaviorist advice. So, but I first want to start with Shannon. Shannon, so what is it that you do? Do you give puppy training? I see you've got the super pup training program. How important is puppy socialization?
Sure. I can't understate the importance of it. You know, dogs have, and I like to actually, I kind of wish we could call puppy socialization something else.
Yes.
Because there's this sort of idea that it involves the puppy socializing with other puppies, playing, doing his thing, just really having fun. For me, I like to look at it more as a process of what I like to call domestication. We're teaching a puppy that these are the things that are going to appear frequently throughout your life. And before the age of 4 months, they're in a sensitive period where we can, we can expose them to those things that they're going to encounter throughout their life, and they'll accept that they should accept those things as being part of the norm.
Yes.
Puppy classes are also great for owners to learn a little bit more about behavior, what makes their puppy tick, how they can manipulate their pup's behavior to get the best out of them.
Yes.
And also to learn some basic obedience skills. But all of those are only used in terms of being able to manage the puppy better.
Yes.
You know, a
yes.
typical complaint that owners have is that my puppy jumps up on me. And it's human nature. And I say to them, well, what would you like your puppy to do instead of that? And the standard response is not jump on me. And it's teaching people that that's not how dogs think. You can't ask a dog not to do something and leave this chasm or this void. You have to say to the dog, this is what I'd like you to do instead of.
Okay.
And
so
the easiest way,
the easiest way
to stop a pup from jumping up on you is this amazing thing we call a sit.
Oh,
I know, right? Yes.
You'd rather make it sit.
Because if it's bums on the floor, it can't be jumping on anyone.
Sure.
And, you know, too many times the things that we teach in obedience classes or puppy classes, we tend to forget that we can use these things to enhance the way that we live with our dogs, to make life easier for them and for us. So yes, sorry, I veered off there from your question. I run a training school. It's quite a large training school. We've got quite a few branches throughout Joburg and Pretoria. And we do puppy classes, obedience, agility, man work, tracking. It's a one-stop shop.
So
it's really great.
So you can start with your puppy and then go all the way through.
Absolutely.
And there's nothing nicer. I know that I used to work with my Rotties. Miss them every day, who passed on many years ago. But it's so wonderful to actually work with your dog.
It is.
Into agility. The bond you form is incredible.
It's awesome. You know, I haven't had a puppy for quite a few years, and I recently got a new pup at the beginning of this year. So I'm now going through the process of puppy class and obedience, and it's so cool.
It is cool.
I've forgotten how nice it is just to spend
bond.
This time with your dog, and he's just so smart. It's fantastic. Must be his handler, obviously.
Absolutely. Always is. Obviously.
I suppose, like, if you were to be a hairdresser and you have a bad hairdo, no one's going to trust you with their hair.
Do you know,
with your dog, it's the same.
Do you know
thing.
What the problem is? And this is what, and it's like, I mean, I love my job. I love doing what I do. But with, in all honesty, in my off time, the last thing I want to do is train dogs.
I'm sure.
Okay. So my poor dogs, they get the lazy man's training. They really do. And they're all so good. I don't know how it's happened.
But so much of it is also about your energy around the dogs. It may not be that you train them constantly, but how you react around them.
You know what? I honestly believe, and I've actually had this conversation with Dr. Ian Dunbar, who is the guru, absolute guru. And we had this, it was a very interesting discussion over a couple of beers and cigars.
Those were the best ones.
I tell you, it was awesome. The real truth comes out then. But we decided between the two of us, the only two qualities an owner needs to have a really well-behaved dog is consistency and persistency. To be consistent in what you expect the dog to do, and persistent in that if you ask the dog to do something and it blows you off, you say, "Oh no, bud, it's going to happen."
You don't just let it happen.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's no need to be ugly about it. You know, I always tell, it's a funny little story. I've trained a lot of detection dogs. And one of the dogs that I trained was trained to find cheetah scat, which field researchers then use. They analyze it, and it helps in the conservation of endangered species. And obviously, the areas we're working are very wild, very remote areas. And we arrived at a location. We'd been in the car for 5 hours. The dog got out of the car. It's obviously not my dog. I trained him to do this. And this is a wild area. I mean, there's large carnivores around. It's not safe. You stay in camp. And we got out of the car, and this dog decided, no, he's off for a little run. And his handler called him, and he did one of those glancing over his shoulder. Yeah, not so much. Bye now. Yeah, that kind of like, laters. And he was off. I called him. He gave me the same look. And I was like, hell no. And I marched off after this dog through the bush for about a kilometer and a half. I mean, this is a really scary place. There's flipping rhinos and elephants and everything. But I was like, I called that dog. I called him.
Maybe if you hadn't and gone after him, you would have never seen him again.
Well, I got hold of him, and I took him quite gently by his collar. I didn't yank him or anything, and I walked him back to where I had been standing when I called him, and he looked at me, and I said, good boy. Mm. To this day, anything I ask that dog to do, he complies straight away, and it's almost like you can imagine him. He's like, he looks at the other dogs and says, don't test that auntie. She's mad. Yeah. She'll follow through. And that's really, I think, what it boils down to. You know, we all lead busy lives, and I think what happens is dogs, they will push their luck a little bit. I mean, that's one of the things we love about them. And when people don't have that persistency, the dog goes, awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
I can work with that. Well, yeah. Dr. Clint, how do you deal with disciplining your animals in your home? You know, I also imagine someone who sees animals all day, you, when you come home, you're tired. You don't want to do the same thing again.
Discipline?
Okay.
Great Danes. Can you use discipline in Great Danes in the same sentence?
No, Zen works.
Okay. Yeah. No, I must say, I agree fully with Shannon. It's important to have, and when I say discipline, it's not authoritarianism discipline, but you've got to have boundaries, and certain behaviors are acceptable and certain behaviors aren't. But again, you can't tell a dog not to do something. You need to divert that unacceptable behavior into something else,
absolutely.
Which is vitally, vitally
important. It's actually interesting. I got an article that's going in the June issue of Canine Zone, written by Scotty Valadeo, talking about digging in the garden, which is really a lot of
which
people
is a
have
symptom
this problem.
Of something, yeah.
And it was so interesting how she actually said you divert that energy. Just even if you provide them with their own digging box, that they know that that's a place where they can go and dig. And she explains why they dig. I mean, it's something that a dog does. They need.
Absolutely.
And more so if they're frustrated or they're bored or something like that. But that was, I just thought of that now. That's a classic case of diverted. You can dig in that spot. That's okay.
Yeah. You know, I think what's so important is we cannot get a dog and expect it not to be a dog.
Yes.
And you know, a lot of these behaviors, digging, chewing, those are things that dogs
do. That's what they do.
So our job as their guardians is to allow them to do it in a way that's not destructive to our environment, the way we perceive it. A dog just looks at this hole that he's dug and thinks, wow, that was amazing.
Yes.
Do you think it could also be a symptom of boredom? Your dog's locked in the back garden all day. It's going to do something
absolutely.
With its time. You know?
It's a very self-rewarding behavior.
Yeah.
I mean, the dogs get so much satisfaction out of their dig. You know, it's nice, cool soil. They find cool things there. That soil flies around all over the show.
Yes. Yes.
And it is. It's very self-rewarding. And again, it's a difficult habit to break.
So we shouldn't knock it till we've tried it, is what you're saying.
Digging.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We should go and dig.
Yeah, I
spend plenty of time in the sand pit with my kids. I love digging in the sand with my kids.
I think we'll try after the show. There's this little patch out there, Jonah. We'll get in there. See what we can find.
Must be something about it.
No, but you're absolutely right. I think a lot of people do think, oh, cute little puppy, bring it home. Everything's great. But it's like a child. You've got to raise it properly. You've got, aside from taking care of its health and its nutrition, you also have to take care of its personality, and you've got to keep it busy. You've got to walk it. You've got to take it to training.
Absolutely.
There's nothing worse for me than people that get these dogs, especially working dogs, and they guard dogs and put them in the back garden. And that's it.
But you see, that's critical to me, and it's absolutely vital that veterinary clinics have a partnership with behavioral specialists like Shannon, because, you know, although we do get a degree at some fair amount of behavioral training as part of our veterinary degree, it's not our primary specialization.
No. Mm-hmm.
And although you can go and specialize in behavioral medicine as a postgraduate degree, It's also in a private practice setting very, very difficult to do. I mean, you just heard it takes persistence.
Yes.
It takes consistency. It takes time. And in a busy practice setting, you've got clients in and out, in and out. It's not something, it's not a full-blown service a veterinarian can offer you. And I mean, I know from my days in private practice, I've seen plenty of patients.
Did you?
And I was only too glad to do it.
Absolutely.
Thanks for that.
Yeah. Sometimes you see a little note up on the vet board or something for behaviors, but I don't know. I think vets should recommend it.
Yeah. Well, even if you've been around dogs your whole life,
yes.
You go to a puppy socialization class and you pick up things you didn't know and things that you weren't aware of and extra little tips and tricks. And I find particularly puppy socialization classes that are attached to a veterinary practice.
Right.
In whether it's a physical relationship, a geographic relationship, or at least a partnership, very often I find the behaviorists will then introduce the puppies to the consultation room and the examination table and get them used to being handled as well.
Right.
And then make that visit to the vet a fun experience every time, which the vet then needs to build on with each subsequent visit, that he needs to reinforce that perception of the dog. And that is a very, very successful practice because it just, you get, your patients are easier to deal with.
Yes.
Yeah. I suppose the vet is always going to be the first point of call if there is a behavior problem. And you don't want that dog to land up at the SPCA because the owners can't take care of it. So why not refer to a behaviorist who can spend time with the dog?
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, the vet sees your dog for 15 minutes at most. Do you know what I'm saying?
Not for basic issues, I was always happy to dish out a little bit of advice. But you very quickly pick up when there's a deep-rooted behavioral issue here that's going to need a bit of time and work and somebody who knows what they're doing and somebody who can devote the time to the dog as well as the owner.
Yes.
And we've said it here as well, you know, training the owners is as important as training the dog. And very often it's just a silly little misunderstanding between the owner and the dog where the owner just doesn't get why the dog is behaving the way it is.
And they just need to understand that.
And once they understand that, that's 70% of the work done.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But Shannon, do you think, I certainly have seen being involved in dogs for many years. When I first got involved in my 20s, there weren't many dog behaviorists around.
No.
But today, I think a lot more people do actually see a behaviorist and are aware that this is something that can actually help you.
Yeah. Look, it's an industry that in the last, I'd probably say the last 20 to 15 years has just mushroomed, which is great because there is a really, really big call for it. You know, in the past, any sort of behavior issue would be dealt with by the trainer. And trainers train dogs. Behaviorists help with behavior therapy. You do have some people that overlap. And, you know, in most countries, particularly in South Africa, to be a full-time behaviorist is not always financially viable. So they'll probably run some sort of classes, you know, to supplement their income.
So just explain that again. So a trainer is going to train your dog to do the sit-stay. Well,
the trainer, and I don't even like to use the word trainer. I like to use the word instructor because instructors don't train dogs. They train people how to train dogs.
How to handle the dog.
Well, how to teach their own dogs.
A behaviorist
will go into, and also normally, sorry, what happens with the instructors or the trainers is that the owner would bring the dog to them and there would be some sort of a group class where they're learning things on it's normally a set syllabus. So it would be stuff like learning to walk nicely on a lead, sit, lie down, etc. You know, and for people who want to do puppy classes, they would go to a trainer, or they want some basic obedience, would go to a trainer. If there's a problem at home, which is unrelated to obedience, so for example, and this is where it gets a bit confusing, people think if their dog's digging holes in the garden, taking it to obedience classes is going to fix that. No, it's not.
That's the difference.
You know, in an obedience class, there isn't a section of the class dedicated to do not dig.
Yes.
Yeah, it doesn't work like that.
Right.
And you could have a dog that's brilliant in obedience class and he gets home and he digs holes.
Yes, right.
That's where behaviorist and would actually, in most cases, come into the home, which is really ideal because then they get an idea of the context and the circumstance surrounding the problem.
Around it. Yes,
and help the owner.
I've always wondered what the actual difference is.
Yeah.
But why do you think it is the case that more people are seeing behaviorists? Have our dogs developed more behavioral issues than they used to have?
I think yes and no. I think our dogs have because our lives have changed so much. You know, I look back on my childhood. I grew up, don't judge me, in Kempton Park. And yeah.
I'm very close there.
Are you? Okay. Phew. Okay. And now I live on the West Rand. I tell you what. Out of the frying pan into the fire. And I remember coming home from school, doing my homework or pretending I'd done my homework and getting on my bicycle and going off with my buddies and just a bunch of dogs.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
And it was actually, now I look back at it, it was totally reckless. Mm. I mean, we just used to go across roads and nobody ever got hurt. It was amazing. Mm. Whereas now our dogs live, and it's a symptom of the society we live in. Our dogs live behind these high walls. You have to actually, if you want to take your dog for a walk out onto along your neighborhood street, it's not a pleasant experience.
No, it's not at all.
You have other dogs rushing up at the gate, going crazy.
Yeah,
so I think that's why we are seeing more behavior problems with our dogs. And I think behavior is so more common because we saw more behavior problems and we learned more about dog behavior as well.
Yes.
It's funny you should mention that. In just a few moments, we're going to be speaking to a lady who we work closely with here at Cliff Central who has a question for you, because she was walking in the street and was approached by a vicious dog, and now she's so afraid to walk in the street without protection that she doesn't know what to do. So we'll find out what to do in those situations, you know. But I'd also like to find out what other animals you deal with. Is it strictly just dogs? I mean, if my cat has behavior problems, can I contact you?
No, cats, we don't do, I don't do cats, spouses, or kids.
Okay.
That's a really short list. No, I obviously specialize in dogs. Over the years, I've also done a lot of animal wrangling, which is training for adverts and commercials, and I've worked with some other species there. I've done a little bit of work with some endangered species, some large carnivores, but primarily the dog stuff. That's where my heart is, yeah.
But tell me, Dr. Clint, are we talking about dogs having more issues? I mean, we were saying earlier that they pick up energy. I think we have more issues. Stress is out of control. Yeah. We always in a rush.
You know,
so your dog's going to pick that up.
Mm-hmm. Sharon, you know what's so interesting about that? The Super Pup program I run, that's trainers across the country. And what happens as part of that program is every month the trainers submit what we call a goals log. Mm. So these are now 20 behaviors we ask them to do with the puppies in their puppy groups. And then every month as the pups graduate, they send through the goals log and they say, right, these are the ones we achieve. These are the ones we don't achieve. And that data is amazing because you get to see across the country what's happening. And the region that often comes short on the socially acceptable behavior towards dogs and people, Gauteng.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Cape Town and Durban pups are super chilled, apparently.
Well, they can go down to the beach for a run.
Doesn't Gauteng have the largest pet population, though, hey, as far as I understand?
Yes, we definitely do. Mm. But also, because of the beach, you get, in those two locations I mentioned, you get people taking their dogs.
Yes, they can get out.
It's a huge dog park, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Joburg and Pretoria, we've got a handful.
That's
They could be great places, but unfortunately, too many people use them incorrectly. Mm-hmm. The dog has no stimulation during the week. Then on a Sunday, they feel bad. They chuck the dog in the back of the buggy. They get to the dog park. The dog's going out of its skull with excitement. Mm-hmm. And they just open the buggy, and the dog leaves the buggy in this heightened state.
Yes, I've seen that.
And runs around and bullies other dogs for the next 2 hours.
Well, I mean, Dr. Clint, you see a lot of dogs in your rooms. Do dogs who don't get to go on walks have more problems than dogs that regularly get to go out and see the world?
No, absolutely. Mm. And I think part of the problem is that we live in a world of instant gratification as well.
Mm.
You know, nobody's got the time and in a lot of cases the willingness to put in the effort it takes to training up a dog. But also our housing patterns have changed. You know, we all live
in high-wall security states,
and also more people are working. So, you know, whereas before there might have been at least one person
at home
with the dog during the day to provide some kind of stimulation, or at least let the dog into the house, get a bit of human interaction. Now both parents are working, kids are away at school, so you come home, this dog has seen nobody the whole day.
Goes
absolutely bananas because he's so excited to see everybody. So, yes, there definitely has been an upswing of behavioral issues. Okay, and also I think there's more recognition of it these days and more acknowledgement of behavioral issues.
People are becoming more aware. They definitely are. I mean, even, you know, with health conditions, I think in a lot of ways we've almost stamped out things like distemper because of vaccinations.
Correct.
But are you seeing other health issues that are more prevalent? Do you get stressed dogs?
You do.
Depressed
you,
dogs?
You do. I mean, separation anxiety is a big one.
Yeah.
And that's probably the most common cause of destructive behavior in dogs during the day when everybody's away from work, away at work. And the other disease we see a lot more commonly in dogs is diabetes. And it's directly as a result of their sedentary lifestyle and getting fed the incorrect diets. Right.
Getting fed off of bowel plates.
And obesity.
Obesity goes hand in hand with diabetes in dogs.
And I think it's almost like with children, like Shannon said earlier, you work all day, all week, you don't see your dog on a Sunday. Well, let's go to Walkhaven.
Yes.
Quickly, you know, go and get that sort of guilt taken off your shoulders. And let's give treats. You know, it's like the parent buying the kids all the toys in the world, but not spending time with it.
Well, guys, we have Marcel on the line. Marcel, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, Marcel. Welcome to the show. Now, won't you just begin with telling us your harrowing tale of what happened to you?
It was rather harrowing, I must admit. I just decided late afternoon, let's go for a walk just around the area in which I live. I know there are a lot of dogs. I do this frequently. And I went around the corner and saw a dog just running around on the road. Excuse me. But there was, I thought at the time, was his owner sort of cleaning out his car also on the verge. And I stopped. I looked at this dog. The dog wagged his tail at me and pretty much ignored me. So I felt like, okay, I'll walk on, which I did. I'd taken 10 steps, and honestly, this was a silent but violent attack, honestly. From the other side of the car, and I didn't see this dog until it had emerged from the back of the car, a dog, just with no warning, no barking, no growling, just charged me. He came out of the yard. The gate was slightly ajar, and he came around. He jumped up as if, you know, teeth bared. No noise, silent dog, teeth bared, and I sort of put my arm up to protect my face and knocked him down. He ran around, bit my leg quite badly, turned back and ran straight into the yard. And this happened in the space of 30 seconds. I had no time to think, really. The guy cleaning the car didn't even see it happen.
Well, let's see, maybe Shannon or Sharon, I know you know a lot about dogs.
It's actually a good
idea
to ask Shannon this. You know, a lot of people take their dogs for a walk. I know we have had problems with that with our own dogs, where dogs do get out of gates and will attack the dog that you're walking. What is the best way of dealing with that? I know what we sometimes do is use a taser, not to use it, but the sound.
Yeah.
Just clicking their taser scares them away. What is the best thing to do?
You know, it's such a horrible situation. And Marcel, I'm sorry to hear your story. That's incredibly traumatic. I mean, you know, I've been bitten by dogs before in the line of duty. So I think as a person just taking a walk down the street and that happens to you, it's really, really traumatic. So my sympathies to you on that. You know, it's a tough one, and I think in a situation like that, this dog that attacked you definitely sounds like a fear type of aggressive kind of dog. You know, those are the ones that will run out, do their thing, and then turn around and run back. Which doesn't forgive it, but you know, I actually don't take my dogs for walks on the road. I just don't do it. Too many people leave their gates open. I've actually had once before going to speak to my neighbor about something, and as he came walking down, he hadn't closed his gate properly, and his 80-kilogram Boerbal came running out charging for me. Fortunately, knowing what I know, I just stood there and pretended to be seriously unimpressed by the dog who actually bumped into me. And I just carried on standing there. My boyfriend at this point, I'd like to point out, had climbed over the fence. Yes. Sorry, did I say ex-boyfriend? Yes, ex-boyfriend. Okay. But most people are going to react and put their hand up as you did. That's an instinctive reaction, and often that will elicit a bite from the dog. You know, the best thing to do is to actually stand, and we do this with young kids that we teach how to behave around dogs, is to be a tree. Is to just stand still. I don't know why they call it be a tree, because you don't stick your arms out sideways. You should be a pillar more than anything else. But any kind of sudden movement then is probably going to elicit a bite from the dog. So that's the best way. And to be perfectly honest with you, I would actually, as Sharon was saying, I would walk with a taser or something like that. Even a little can of pepper spray could be okay. But the taser's nice in that a lot of the time, just that noise is going to be enough for the dog to go, oh, not interested. And there's no no harm actually done. And the pepper spray, you know, a friend of mine was cycling with her dog, and a dog came rushing out again, gate was left open, and actually got hold of her dog. She emptied a canister of pepper spray onto this other dog, and nothing happened. So, but you know, look, with regards to this particular dog, the owner is 100% liable for what happened there. 100%.
The owner was obviously, my dog's never done something like this before, and I'm standing there in a pool of blood, he's taken responsibility, he has, and he's paid the medical bills, and he's been concerned and called me up and so forth. It's the scary thing to go take a walk now, you know.
I would imagine, like you say, the owner is the one who's the most surprised, because he's never seen his dog react like this towards another human. So what, I mean, I'm sure a lot of us find ourselves in that situation. The moment we open our gate, the dog bolts. How do you control that?
Well, again, like we were saying earlier on, what do we want the dog to do instead of bolt?
Diversion. Yes.
Exactly. Okay. And there's a number of different things you can do. You know, I always advise people from puppyhood, every time, ideally, you don't want your dog to have access to your driveway, just from a safety perspective. Okay. But if that's unavoidable, from early puppyhood, as you open that gate, before the gate even starts opening, you take a handful, and you can even use the dog's food pellets, and you scatter them in the grass adjacent to the driveway. And you'll see that after a very short time, and obviously repeat the process when you come home. So just have a little Tupperware in the car with the pellets in it. You can actually get out of the car, chuck them out the gates, off to the side, so you can open and close with the dog being off your path of travel.
Looking for his pellets. Okay.
And it gets to the point where they will hear the gates start opening, and no matter where they are on the property, they run to that little section and they sit there waiting expectantly.
That's a brilliant idea.
That's so clever. Yeah, and it beats getting out of the car and shouting and maybe slapping the dog.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Do you know, John, another thing that causes so many problems is dogs are creatures of habit. And once you've exposed a dog to something, he's not going to forget it. And people will often take their dogs for walks by walking their dog over the threshold of their property. They open the gate and they walk the dog out. Mm-hmm. The dog then has a great walk. He sniffs, he pees, he does whatever he needs to do. So they're teaching the dog that just outside this gate lies this amazing world. My advice to people is don't walk your dog in neighborhood streets. It's not safe. And it teaches them to actually run out of your gate. My advice is put your dog in the car, drive him to a park, and have a walk with him there. Put him back in the car. So you're addressing a number of things there. You're addressing car travel. You're ending up in a situation where even if your gate is open, the dog's probably not going to cross the threshold because he's never gone on foot.
Ah.
Yeah. He's only ever gone out
that
in the car.
Interesting.
I've had this situation with my dogs. I've had someone's left my gate open. I have Great Danes. I live in a sort of an agricultural area. I've had horses cantering down the road. And you can imagine, if Great Danes decide to chase horses, someone's going to get hurt.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And four Great Danes standing there, gate wide open, and none of their toes even touching the gate track. And it's almost like that they're like, no, this is voodoo. You just don't do that.
Okay. Well, Marcel, I'm really sorry that you had such a terrible experience. But like Shannon says, just stand like a tree the next time it happens.
it really does work. I promise you. You will lose about 30 kilograms in sweat.
Stand like a tree.
It's very effective. It really is.
Thank you, Shannon. Thank you, Donna.
Thanks, Marcel. Right. Cheers. Okay. Bye-bye.
Well, I put out there a couple of questions on Canine Zone yesterday, and one of the questions that came in that I think you can both help me with is dog poisoning. It's been doing the rounds, I'm sure. From a veterinary perspective, you see it quite often. So I want to ask you, Dr. Clint, what are the symptoms? What is the treatment? Is there anything you can do at home before you actually get your dog to the vet? And from Shannon, I wanted to find out from you, is there a way you can train your dog not to eat? I believe it's sausages with poison inside. How can you train your dog not to go there in the first place?
I think if we just start off a little bit of a background on the most common poison used is an agricultural pesticide called Temic. Or Eldecob. Now, Temic was voluntarily withdrawn from the market probably 4 years ago already by the company that manufactures it because of this particular issue. But there's still a lot of it floating around, and it unfortunately gets sold, as you've all heard the term two-step, it gets sold as a rat poison. And Temic or Eldecob is very similar in mode of action to organophosphates, but where organophosphates bind irreversibly to the receptors, the Temic or the Eldecob binds reversibly, so it can be reversed to a certain extent. And what these things tend to do is they tend to bind to the acetylcholine receptor, so they cause a permanent depolarization of the muscle and causes a paralysis that way. And what tends to happen is that the symptoms you'll see generally are dogs become a little bit unsteady. Sometimes their pupils are dilated. They tend to drool a lot.
Is it quick acting?
It's very quick. Very quick. And you can generally, you can just immediately see something's not right to these dogs. And there is literally not much you can do at home. The remedy for these dogs is atropine. And so you need to get them to a vet, and time is really of the essence, because the stuff is now in the gut, it's being actively absorbed. So the sooner you get them to the vet, the sooner we can get some atropine in there, which counteracts the effects of the Eldecob, and the vet can at least administer an adsorbent such as activated charcoal or something like that, just to bind whatever toxins are in the stomach. But I wouldn't advise messing around with activated charcoal at home before you go to the vet, because the first thing that dog needs is atropine. And I always advise clients in Shannon Kleiman years, my dogs sleep inside at night. I'm also in an agricultural area. They are a better deterrent inside the house than they are outside. And then they can't be poisoned. Particularly look around for symptoms. You'll often find the dogs will often vomit as a result of ingestion of the toxin. And you'll often find these black.
Is that the first sign?
Yeah, so if you can, just collect some of the vomit and bring it along to the vet, as gross
it's
as
like
it is.
Little black granules.
Little black granules. Often you'll find remains of the sausage that they've put the stuff in where they've chucked it over the fence. It is unfortunately used as a prelude to burgling
to
houses,
crime.
I'm afraid.
Right.
Yeah, they
right.
do unfortunately poison the dogs
well,
to get rid of them.
I can't imagine a human being doing it for any other reason than to, I mean, would they just do it to be...
You do get people who will do that with noisy dogs, if their neighbors have noisy dogs. There was recently that huge debacle on Facebook with some lady making some comment about how she was going to poison her neighbor's dog. I mean, wow. There's many ways to address this problem.
So the best thing is if your dog is throwing up, see if you can collect some of that, quickly get to the vet. And they will know what to do there. What is the recovery rate? I mean, I've heard of so many that have died.
They do. The recovery is fairly quick. If you get them to the vet quick enough and you get the atropine into them, and then you need to keep them atropinized for quite a while. Some dogs need to go onto a ventilator.
Is that a drip that they put them on?
Well, no. Well, there's a number of treatment regimens that you can use, but whether the atropine goes intravenously or subcutaneous, however, you just got to get the stuff into the dog.
But and then you say quick, so from ingestion, how long do you have?
You see, it depends on a number of things, how much they ate, the size of the dog, and how much poison they actually got in at the time. So, it's not something that you can really mistake for anything else. I mean, you really see this dog is—he's not just vomiting, he's not just sick, he's unsteady, he's drooling, he's staring off into space. He's not happy. He or she's not happy.
It's terrible.
Just bomb them in the car, take them straight to the vet, and rather safe than sorry.
And they would have a good chance of survival if with the right treatment quickly.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay. I find that the recovery rate from Temic poisoning is a lot better than from pure organophosphate toxicity. And a lot of dogs that get organophosphate toxicity have to go into ventilators for a while because organophosphate binds irreversibly to the acetylcholine receptors. You need to wait for the body to manually process these receptors and get them out of the system, and often they'll require ventilatory support. But I find with Eldecob, you just keep them atropinized for a while. Sometimes they usually need a few days in hospital if they can be monitored, and sometimes some adjunctive therapy. Some dogs develop a residual muscle tremor afterwards that needs to be treated for a while. But they do, the recovery rate is quite good if they treat it in time.
Oh, that's good news. But, I mean, as you say, keep your dogs inside, but I do that with mine. But in the morning, we spoke about a lady a few weeks ago. She'd come home from an event, went to have a shower, let her dogs outside. By the time she let them in, they were all three showing these symptoms, and they all three died.
Oh,
so
that's terrible.
You know, you keep them inside. Should you inspect your property first in the morning?
Yeah.
To see if
I think the sad reality is if someone is out there to poison your dog, you know, it's
scary.
Unless your dog is trained not to take food from strangers.
Now, can you do that?
Yes. G, you know, this is a it's a really, really tricky thing to do. Again, you know, what do we want the dog to do? Not take food. So what's the alternative? Not take food. You know, you can't train the dog to do something instead of taking food.
Yes.
It is possible to poison-proof dogs, but the methods that you've got to use are so harsh. They're so extreme. I don't know if it's actually worth it, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I can imagine. How would you teach them
not
to? You
would have to withhold food maybe or do funny things with food that may it may develop a bad relationship with food.
Yeah. Well, no, what you would normally do, and this is one of the things, you would actually use, you know, we've learned so much about learning theory. One of the things that happens when you use punishers is you get fear of things in the environment at the time the punishment was administered. And this would be one of the situations where you would put a shock collar on the dog and you would actually set up a sting operation. You put bait around the guard and the dog goes to investigate and you zap them. Frankly, I'm not prepared to do that to a dog.
The solution would be sleep with your dogs inside, if not in your bedroom, in the kitchen, wherever it is.
Absolutely.
And also you say don't allow your dogs to have access to your driveway. That's a big
thing. Well, that's a big thing. And, you know, also just stay in touch with what's going on in your community because these things don't happen
in isolation.
You know, if someone's dogs have been poisoned or suspected, then be on extra, you know, be extra vigilant.
You mentioned vigilance. If you see weird objects outside your house, perhaps a bottle that wasn't there that morning, something like that. Those are all markers that they use.
Yes. And you know, it's also worth mentioning that dog owners must know who to contact during after hours.
Yes,
too many dog owners.
That's a good question.
They'll contact their normal vets, and normally these poisonings happen outside of normal hours, and then they get upset because they can't contact the vets. You know, vets are great, but they haven't figured out how to do this 24/7 thing yet. And there are some big all-hours vets in Johannesburg. You know, don't waste time now phoning around. Know the details of where to go. Know the closest one.
Yes,
because that extra half an hour takes you to find out, oh, okay, I should be going here. That could be the half hour that saves your dog's life.
So know who that vet is, where they are based.
Yes,
can get
find
quick,
out
quick.
Where the all-hours vets are.
I think just from a human aspect, obviously if your dog has just been poisoned, you do need to be wary of yourself. Someone is around your property who has poisoned your dog for some
reason.
This
is true, right? Yeah.
So don't just focus on getting out there, getting the dog first. Make sure you are also safe.
This is, and you know, unfortunately, and this is where it's such a heinous thing that they do because they rely on the fact that people are going to be emotionally upset now. It's just horrid, absolutely horrid.
It is terrible. It is absolutely terrible. We've actually got a chappie here, Brad, is going back on the walking with dogs. He was saying he was walking his three huskies. His huskies pushed in front of him to protect him. I stood my ground, moved my dogs back, and then advanced slowly towards the dog until the owner took him back inside. But again, I mean, that's fantastic that his own huskies didn't react to the other dogs coming towards him. Now, another question that we got in here was dogs in cold weather and whether dogs can get sick, physically ill from cold weather. The gentleman, Harry Scott, says that his dog every year during winter gets pneumonia. Dr. Clinton, is that possible? Can dogs catch colds and flus just like we do?
Look, I mean, physiologically, they're very similar to humans, so it is possible. There's two camps or two schools of thought when it comes to, let's say, cold weather causing sickness in humans. You know, one camp will tell you, yes, the cold air will make you sick, whereas the other camp says, well, it's not the cold air that makes you sick, it's the temporary suppression in your immunity due to the cold air that allows you then to become sick. And the same things apply to dogs. But it doesn't just apply to respiratory illnesses. If you do have a dog that is predisposed to respiratory issues and you take him into cold air, that sudden change in temperature is going to cause some issues. But cold weather with dogs with chronic osteoarthritis, dogs with hip dysplasia, elbow dysplasia, you know, it's going to, just like any human being whose joints get sore when it's cold, it's going to affect them adversely as well.
And do we get cold enough here for them to get, was it hypothermia? Can that happen?
I think possibly a small dog that's left outside and driving all the night with no access to shelter whatsoever quite easily.
Well, speaking of small dogs, I know a lot of people like to get their dogs jerseys, but I actually heard from my biology teacher, in fact, that their fur is designed in such a way as to sort of deflect the wind. So the moment you put a jersey over them, it sort of takes away that function of the hair. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, look, if you look at your own, the hair on your own arm, if you get what you call goosebumps, and that's actually those piloerector muscles in the hair follicles that are erecting the hairs on your arm, and that actually traps a layer of air, supposed to trap a layer of air against the skin, which acts as a form of insulation. And obviously, dogs and cats having fur are a lot more adept at that particular issue. So, you know, if a dog has got a thick coat, and now you're talking dogs, if dogs had not evolved into what they are today, in other words, had human beings not applied artificial selection pressure to evolve into all the various dog breeds we got to say, I'd say, yes, let nature do what it does best. But unfortunately, you know, the fifis of the world with little blankets on and shivering.
A husky
and shivering
would probably cope outside in the freezing cold,
you know,
but
some
not
dogs
a little
just, they don't,
fox terrier
they,
or something
they
like that.
They don't cope, absolutely. No. So, and again, even dogs within the same breed will have various susceptibilities to cold.
Yeah.
But you can see when your dog is shivering. You can tell when it's cold. Mm. It's very obvious, eh?
I would say so, but shivering is not always necessarily a sign of cold. Dogs can shiver when they're nauseous. Dogs can shiver when they're scared.
Yes, nerves.
So, but you are generally, I think you look for that heat-seeking behavior when dogs are when dogs are cold. They'll always want to come and burrow in somewhere or sort of burrow into your legs. And that's possibly a sign that they're cold. I've always had large dogs, and even, you know, we've had the odd rescue here and there, small dogs. I've never really put jerseys on my dogs because it's never really been necessary.
Yes. No, I think as long as they've got a warm place to sleep out of, chef, I always say, preferably inside during the very, very cold winter. Yeah. I can't bear the thought of doggies sitting outside in icy cold.
The issue I have with German, I don't have an issue with jerseys when it's cold, but the problem is particularly now at this time of year, we've got cold nights and we've got hot
days.
And that jersey is going to inhibit the dog's ability to thermoregulate. Mm. Remember, dogs have got a lot of mechanisms which they use to thermoregulate their body temperature, from panting to sweating on their foot pads and on their nasal plenum.
Yes.
And if you're going to put a jersey on them, there's obviously another method of dogs use, which is called body heat radiation. So they literally just radiate the heat off their bodies. And if you're going to put a jersey on them, it's going to trap all that heat. So if it does get hot and they're out in the sun, the dog can't pull this jersey off.
Yes.
You can overheat them. Yeah. And that's why I'm a little bit wary.
You can't just leave it on the whole of winter.
No.
It has to be a daily thing. Mm. How cold is it today?
Yeah. Yes.
And if necessary, put it on at night, but take it off during the day. Our winter, even up here on the Highveld, our days are not that cold.
Especially
to have a jersey on.
Absolutely. Before we run out of time, there was a chappie here. His name is Just Me. He says, have you guys seen the picture of the guy going around in four ways with a chain going through his dog's mouth, and it was chained to the back of the bucky? Well, I haven't seen it, but Just Me, if you see that again, please take a picture of the number plate of this vehicle and report it to the SPCA.
I actually saw that on Facebook this morning.
Really?
It looks like it's going viral there. So,
oh, is it?
Yeah.
That's
exactly what it's about, I'm not sure.
So someone's already called that in.
It looks like it, yeah.
Hopefully. Mm. Oh, no, I'm glad I haven't seen that. And we've got so much more to talk about. I mean, we've got Brad again that's asking what Shannon's thoughts are on Cesar Millan's training methods, which would probably take up an entire hour. We need to get
to
that.
One day when we have a Cesar join us via Skype, I know Sharon's going to hook that up for us. Then we'll ask him that. And,
no, look, his methods are very, very controversial.
And we'll bring Shannon back just to...
I think we need to do that. Yeah. We'll definitely bring you back in, Shannon.
That'd be great.
But I think we've kind of run out of time already.
Dr. Clint, I'm sure we'll see you within the next month or so.
Yes.
Definitely. First Wednesday of every month.
So if there's any questions, do get them through.
Absolutely, because we still have a question on anal glands. So I think we must
missed the anal gland question.
I'm so sorry I missed this question.
I don't know if I'm happy or sad about it.
I know. And then also what you'd mentioned was the, I can't pronounce this, the beetle?
The Spirocirculupi.
That's him.
That we need to devote an entire show to. That's an important, particularly up here on the Highveld. That's something we need to talk about.
I didn't even know it existed until we actually did an article in Canine Zone about it, and it's scary.
Well, if Sharon didn't know about it, then nobody knows
it's
about
scary.
It. So,
how do you pronounce it again?
Spirocirculupi. That's the name of the worm. The dung beetle is the intermediate host for the worm.
Okay. So we're going to have to devote the entire hour to that. And Shannon, we'll definitely bring you back to
talk more about
various training methods and everything else. I think we've run out of time. So join us next week for our interview with SPCA about the dog fighting.
It's going to be a tough one.
It's going to be a tough one. It's going to be an interesting one. And, yeah, we'll be back then. Thank you so much for joining us.
CliffCentral.com.